speaks about things which will happen in the future, you start with an absolutely, maybe I should put this on first, the sure conviction that whatever you say, you're going to get it wrong. There will of course be elements of what I will speak of tonight which will not come to pass. On the other hand, it has been my experience, and of course, as the introduction indicated, I've been around the space world from virtually since inception. And in the quiet times of night, I have to admit that when I think back to the things that I thought would happen in the 1960s and 1970s, I was inordinately timid in my projections. And so much more has happened than we would have dared to have suggested might have happened, say, back in the early 1960s. We would have been laughed at. We were laughed at anyhow. But a great deal has happened which was really beyond our ability to believe. So when I give my predictions tonight, some of it I know will be totally wrong. And quite a bit of it, I suspect, will also be understated. Things will happen even more so than I am prepared to project. Of course, what I am doing tonight is putting together two forces which a scientist has at his disposal. One force is the knowledge of what is or will be technologically possible. There is so much that you can think of which sounds great but won't happen. You know that the basic physics or the basic science won't really mature and the technology won't be there. But you can identify those things which can be delivered without any radically new discoveries. Of course, radical discoveries are another thing which I'm not about to project any radical discoveries tonight. I have to simply say, given that it's a steady as she goes situation with technology and science pressing forward, this is where we'll go to. So one force is the force of the evolving scientific and technological knowledge of the world. The other force, which I have to play with in my delivery, is the force of demand, that which the world will pay for. We perhaps think that the need to demonstrate benefits is something new which has been discovered in the 1970s. That's not really so. There were always reasons had to be found to justify expenditures, and I'll talk of that in a moment. But the important force that I have used to drive my crystal ball is commercial and national demand. So, in when I speak of what will happen in 2015, I'm trying to put together both the market demand and the technological reality. I'm, of course, not going to leave out the demand for scientific research. But it also has to be interpreted as to why nations pay for it, and I'll try to speak of that somewhat. Now, 2015, that's 58 years after Sputnik. People who were born when Sputnik went up will be retiring. It's 46 years after the giant leap for mankind on the surface of the moon. So we're talking a long time after all the original activities in space. And I think we have to expect that by 2015, space will be an extremely mature technology. And so when I speak, I'm talking of things which everyone then will regard satellites in the sky as totally old hat. And it will be part of the normal operation of this world. So let us press on to find out what this mature technology will be doing for us. It will be integrated with all other forms of technology that we have, and it will be often indistinguishable from the total technological apparatus with which we run the world. So tonight I'm going to, in a sense, project us all to the year 2015, and I'm going to say, here we are in 2015, and let's look back at what has happened in space, and then let's look at what is happening now in 2015. And it's a way of perhaps focusing on what people in that time will think in space. Looking back from 2015, the historians of space will recognise the decade of the 1960s as the miracle decade. The decade when everything seemed to happen without any real fiscal restraint. When people were, and there will be many technologists who will be croaking and leaning on their sticks and saying, it's not like that anymore. And it won't be, because those years were very different. But of course, when we think back to that miracle decade from 2015, we have to remember that there was a good reason why checkbooks were open so much. And to put it bluntly, it was a military reason. And it's not the purpose of tonight to talk about it, but of course the space program in the 1960s was primarily a surrogate for military space activities. It developed a lot of other things, but the decisions taken in very inaccessible smoke-filled rooms was basically to do with a military ambition. And that has to be recognised. Looking from 2015 after the miracle decade, we will be able to see certain quite definite trends. One trend in looking back from then will be that the further in space in the United States and the Soviet Union and in Europe steadily decline as that is the willingness to be involved in the big grand plans of the 1960s. These will be seen to decline as the years go by. While looking back, there will be seen to be a steady growth of commercial space, commercial companies, consortia and such like, providing a service for the user. That service will range from very practical communications and remote sensing to even, I dare say, entertainment. And I'll get onto that later. The classic crashes of the space program might even be on television. But in addition, if we look back from 2015, we'll see another change which happened steadily over the decades, and that is the steady growth of space activities in the Third World, which is of course one of the strange things, but which we all know is happening. And of course their reasons are not dissimilar from the reasons that the Soviets and the USA were involved in space in the 1960s. There is a large element of national security in the major activities that are taking place in India, China, and which will take place elsewhere. So, and these activities in 2015, we will see that they have continued till those countries have become fully fledged members of the space club, with both from the military and the civil point of view. And in 2015 we will find that there, on the while space has become very normal, very much part of the normal apparatus of country, there will still be some, shall we say, focused endeavours of a pioneering nature. And I will try to talk of them in a bit more detail. But I think in each case they will be rooted in a need to develop technology or to provide national security. That will be the real reason. But what they will be seen to be doing is providing scientific research, providing interplanetary travel, and in particular, and this becomes a rather blurred question, this one, the monitoring of the global environment. Because I think that is where, from many points of view, the space technology will have its one of its major payoffs. But to that in a moment. Now, one thing that's important to recognise is that when we speak of the year 2015, virtually any technology that will be used in space in that year will have been developed by 1995. So as we look back from 2015, we can identify perhaps the most modern technology as one which was first tried in an experimental satellite in 1995. So you can understand that I'm not really having to project that far. The technology that you use in a practical satellite is very, very conservative technology. The new technologies that we will undoubtedly be using in 2015 will still, as they are today, only used on the research or the pioneering satellites. That's just a comment that I should make as I go by. So, let us look in 2015 at what space is doing for us. Space, of course, has now, and I'm now talking, of course, this is getting very complicated. Sometimes I speak in 1989, sometimes in 2015, but in 1989, as you know, our main use of space is in communications. And there is our Australian space fleet, you might call it, and with one exception, they are communication satellites. Now, the fact is that the provision of those satellites has given us roughly a 200-fold increase in our communication capability with the rest of the world. And what that also means is the price of telephone calls, for example, overseas, is now roughly 1/20th in real terms of what it was in 1964. Speaking from 1989, the satellites themselves will not improve our capability to speak overseas or to ourselves much more. But in 2015, we will look back and say, aha, it was the 1990s that we saw an enormous improvement in our ability to talk between the continents as a result of the optical cables. Because in the 1990s, we are going to find, and already we have them, the optical cables which will be under the oceans, that are already being laid between the capital cities of Australia and of other countries. Those optical cables will have a capacity to send information which will give us, by 2015, 1,000 times more communication capability than we even have now. And we think about it and say, whatever will we do with it? And I think what we will do with it, and I stress that this is now a wedding of two technologies, the cable technology, and you can't think of space in isolation. Space is part of the infrastructure, as I say. So the cables and the satellites will work together to provide communication throughout the world. The cables will be on what are called the trunk or thick routes, where you've got 1 million or 100,000 people at either end of the circuit. And you'll use satellites to go from the centres of population out to the more diffuse parts of population. But there will be this enormous increase in communication capability. And of course, that will push the price down. And where the providers nowadays tell us that the price of communications will stay still, roughly, in dollar terms. In other words, the price will decrease in real terms by the inflation rate, or thereabouts. And one can predict that by 2015, the price of a circuit to provide television between two points will be roughly the same price as we have now for telephone call. Now, I'm not wishing to suggest we'll be using television phones. I think the prospect fills me with horror. But what we will be doing, I believe, is we will have perfected the technology of the conference, the long-distance conference, where we can use masses of television receivers and cameras to simulate in separate cities the boardroom conference, the technical conference to discuss the project management of the project, and so on. And so many of the things which nowadays we have to make it work, get people together in the one room, will not be necessary. In fact, it might be a very good thing, because sooner or later the fuel, and it certainly will be not before 2015, I believe, but fuel is a diminishing resource, and I suspect that the television conference will increasingly, we will learn to use it as a very effective part of our management. And the optical cable and the satellite will make that possible. And that technology will, in a sense, begin to substitute for some of our travel that we do today. We also will see, I believe, the gradual phasing out, and this will be happening just about in 2015, the phasing out of those well-known things called books, magazines, and newspapers. I think the writing is on the wall that technologically we will be using large data banks so when we wake up in the morning we plug into a receptacle by the bed and onto a fairly small viewer will be today's newspaper in a slightly different form, but there it will be, and we can scan the headings and we can look at the various bits we want to look at. Or when we go to bed at night, we will plug into directly into a publishing house, which might be in Philadelphia. We load 30 pages that we want and we read that before we go to sleep. There will be space, and cables will have changed our whole approach to the printed word. And maybe that's just as well too, because we're running out of trees. I don't know. There are some interesting counterpoints here between what technology will permit us to do and what might be a requirement through lack of resources on the Earth's surface. And satellites will also begin to provide something which the cables can't give, and that is mobile communication. OSAT 2, which will be launched in 7 years' time, will be the first satellite, maybe it's not really, but it will be one of the first which will permit people in trucks to communicate back to base through satellites. And that will become an important part of satellites of the future. it will become part of the extended mobile telephone system, which we all know now in cities. Everyone seems to be running around with mobile telephones in their cars. That will extend right outside and throughout countries such as Australia. So let's press on. The satellite has been so successful in communications because it sits up here and can see a lot of the world at once. And that's true of remote sensing as well. Remote sensing is when a satellite looks down on the Earth and essentially takes a picture of the part of the Earth. That satellite's taking a picture just to the east of Mount Isa, and a few minutes later it takes a picture somewhere down over Broken Hill, and so on. Now, that technology of remote sensing has had a tortured history to date, and it's still only partially in place. By the year 2015, on the other hand, it will be totally in place because it will have been wedded to another technology. Yet again, this idea of a wedding of technologies. The technology that remote sensing will be wedded to by 2015 is really the modern, or the descendant of the modern computer. Because what we will be doing more and more is using historical information, which is loaded in the optical discs of our computers, and the images taken from satellites today in 2015, and putting together, in a sense, the pictures that we get from space in 2015 will be used as prompts to indicate situations which happened previously. It'll be the combination of the historical knowledge and the contemporary observations that will be used to predict and manage phenomena on the continent and off the continent. Going quickly, and there will be really four separate ways that remote sensing will be used there. First and foremost, of course, will be in meteorology, the prediction of the environment, which is impacting on agriculture and on everything else. And I think it's important to recognise that there is where Australia could well be, I can't predict for certainty, but could well be providing part of the technology that will be flying in space in 2015. I speak particularly of the technology which measures the surface temperature, the temperature of the seas, which the computers of 2015, as the computers of 1989 are doing, but they will do it much more in 2015, are running mathematical predictions of the weather. The instrument which gives those temperature measurements, I suspect by 2015, will be partially built in Australia. We Australians are currently, we have finished the construction of an instrument to fly in 1991, and it will be the descendants of that instrument which will be measuring the temperature of the Earth in the 2015 era, which will be feeding the information into the mathematical models which will predict the weather. It's interesting that Australia currently is active in another area, which by 2015 could mean that we will be providing space hardware, and I refer very briefly, oh well, there's another picture taken from space of the temperatures, showing the ability to look at the currents, and these will be used for husbanding the fishing resource. I will press on. I think maybe I've forgotten the order in which I put the slide. Yes. In 2015, we may be providing the information to the world, or our technology, our Australian technology, may be providing the information to the world on the atmospheric pressure. It's so important in the prediction of the future weather. Currently, the Bureau of Meteorology and CSIRO are jointly developing this type of technology, and who knows, but I suspect that with a little modicum of luck, we will be the supplier of that technology to the world in the 21st century. So that is a technology that we will be, that will have made in Australia in space in 2005. There are other activities. Satellites will look down on the Earth and show the agricultural changes, the vegetation changes, and these will be used to predict crops. They will be used by the commodity traders in other countries to undercut our prices for Australian wheat, and the governments of other countries who are strong advocates of non-intervention in markets will subsidise their own products like mad. But here is the technology which will be very much used to manage our resources and to market our resources. We also will, I guess I've got one of my slides out of order. The other activity from space, well, there are two other activities with remote sensing, which we will be doing in 2015, is we'll be using satellites very much to follow up on disasters and to give precise information if we're about to do something. The Chernobyls of the world, the serious floods in Bangladesh, the floods in Australia, bushfires. Satellites are undoubtedly the best way to assess damage and to get rapid information in most cases. I mean, if it happens in the middle of a city, there are other ways. But in most cases, satellites will be, by the 2015, will be the standard way to assess major need for succour, the need for damage control, the need for recompense to people who may have lost. In the insurance industry, in fact, we use satellites then very much as part and parcel of their everyday activities. And we'll use satellites which look at the Earth with radar waves to follow where the ships are, and it will be an important part of safety at sea. It will be an important part of making sure that people don't come to Australia with things that we don't want them to bring. So who's going to pay for all of this? I think that by 2015, certainly any of the satellites which have to do with monitoring of the Earth's resources, anything to do with the assessment of damage, they almost certainly will be privately funded. There'll be consortia which will probably have 50 or more companies from a lot of countries as shareholders in those consortia. And I could well imagine 3 or 4 companies from Australia would be involved in 1 or 2 of these consortia. I think it is, we might see in the, there are more expert people in the audience on this one, but in the environmental monitoring, the meteorological area, I believe it will still be an international regime such as at present. And for things such as radar satellites, since there is a fair element of national security in this, I think we might find that nations still fund radar satellites. But by and large, we will be seeing very much commercial involvement in most of the satellites that we now know about. Now, let's go on to some of the more speculative things that we will be seeing in the year 2015. Some of you will be saying, what will we be manufacturing in space? In the 1980s, there's been much talk that things like silicon for transistors or pharmaceuticals and such like will be manufactured in space. Sitting in 2015, I think we might say, those were interesting ideas, but they haven't really happened, have they? Because, you see, although it is possible that there might be some tremendously great advantage in some area for manufacturing in space, although it's possible, I think it's not probable. The reason you argue that you might wish to manufacture in space is pure and simple, the lack of gravity, and that certain manufacturing processes might go better in the absence of gravity. And the examples that are usually given are anything to do with fluids. In the absence of gravity, you don't get convection, and a lot of the problems that come in making crystals of silicon and things like this would go away if there were no gravity. But we're learning to solve those problems given that we live in the gravitational field of Earth. And I think we'll find that the costs of manufacturing in space will always just be too much, given that the Earth-based technology keeps getting better and better all the time. What I cannot exclude, of course, though, is that there might be some quite radical breakthrough, that there'll be some process or some phenomenon that we've never seen on Earth. I think this is very unlikely, because the gravitational force is really quite weak compared to most other forces, electrical and such like. But stranger things have happened. But I would suggest that manufacturing in space will occur only if there's some radical new process. It will not occur through what we might say gradual refinement or improvement of an existing technology by taking it into space. Now, what about the business of actually going into space? By the year 2015, we will have what we can call the Essendon Airport effect, well and truly in force in the world space scene. Many of the space bases of the 1960s and 70s, the launching facilities, will have been totally built up by industry, by houses, in the Japanese case, by the fishermen who want to get paid every time they go out to sea, whether they don't go out to sea to catch fish in the middle of the hurricane season, which they don't fish anyhow. There will be many forces by civilization cramping existing space facilities, and there will be a new crop of space facilities in the world. The French base in French Guiana will probably still be there, unless there are very major political upheavals in South America, which none of us can discount. Of course, it's in this area then of the new space bases of the world that we have to take a serious look at Cape York. My view is, and this is a 1989 view of course, I for some time have said I think we've got a roughly 30% chance that Cape York will be a space launching facility of major international importance in the 1990s, and I still believe that 30% number. So in 2015, we could well in Australia have one of the two major space launching facilities of the world in our own country. That's where my crystal ball is a little bit cloudy, but I think I can see that fairly clearly. Now, I'm now stepping out into the very tenuous areas where maybe my predictions are, up till now I think the predictions are quite sound. But let us be a little bit more adventurous. The world by 2015 will be using computers at a very high level. In the last few years we've all seen banking go very much over, and we all use the plastic wall, as my kids call it, and we use all forms of computing for management, word processing and so on. And that, of course, fueled by all this extra communication capability I mentioned, a thousandfold increase. Computers will be used to manage an enormous number of things internationally. Companies in one country will direct activities on the shop floor in other countries by computers and so on. The whole world will be held together from many points of view by the computer systems and the communication systems. And it's frightening to think what we will become more and more dependent on them, and therefore more and more dependent on the computer systems not breaking down. And of course there will be in the world people who are not happy with this manner in which the computer will be an important part of our society. And I think we can expect by the year 2015 that there will be serious worries about sabotage of the very large computer systems which make the systems of 1989 look like child's toys. So, thinking very well, I suggest that one of the uses of space will be to provide the world with the Fort Knoxes of the information systems. I go as far as suggesting that that's perhaps what the moon will be used for, where the key computer facilities which hold the commercial and national and defence secrets of a number of countries, they will certainly be held and very securely defended, compounds on ground, on the earth. But I could well imagine that key facilities one day, by 2015, could be established on the moon. It would be an ideal place to make sure no one could get at you and do real bad damage to the network of which the world will operate. In science, I can be much more certain about my predictions. Looking back from 2015, we will see that in astronomy, the 1990s were the decade of miracles in that science. Looking back from 2015, we will see that there was a major optical observatory, Hubble. We will see major X-ray and major radio-type observatories having been flown. And the whole face of astronomy will have changed. And in 2015, was And those big changes of the 1990s will continue till about 2010. And it will be about 2005 that the world will begin to say, let's have a second generation of astronomical observatories in space. Space is a great place to do astronomy, because none of the absorbing or distorting effects of the atmosphere are going to affect you. It also, from another point of view, is a great place to get funds for space research, because astronomy is one of the technologies of major importance for national defence. The technologies of astronomy are very much used in defence systems, and that's why so much astronomy is done as part of world space. It's also a very good place for developing new technologies of a commercial nature. So about 2010, I believe, there will be a strong push for the second generation, the new wave of astronomy in space. And I think I can map what that will be now. We in Australia, in fact, are leaders in a form of radio astronomy called aperture synthesis, where you take a number of antennas on either side of Australia and right internationally. You make the use a computer to simulate an antenna dish the size of Australia. And this gives you enormous ability to see very small detail. Well, around about 2015, we will be flying an optical telescope like that. It won't be the size of Australia. It might be about 500 metres across. I don't mean we, Australia, I mean we, the world. And by putting together optical telescopes up to 500 metres apart, we will be seeing the very innermost detail of some stars, and of course we will actually see the suns far out into the solar system with that detail. We'll be able to resolve, and that type of science, the ability to look in very long wave infrared, and the ability to look in the ultraviolet and look at the reactions in which stars are operating, generating their energy, those are the questions that will excite scientists, and those are the questions which will also provide commercial and national security type technology. So we will see that. We will certainly see a very major new generation of astronomy in about 2015. The other area of science, which I am quite confident will be very important in the years around about 2015, is the use of satellites in the monitoring and management of the environment. We've touched on this in remote sensing, but this gets very much a question of whether you think that the greenhouse effect is going to be a sufficiently major effect. There certainly is a process there, and its main impact, in my opinion, this is a personal opinion, will be that when we have extreme events like cyclones or earthquakes and such like, that the effects will be seen into parts of the world which we don't see them at present. But I don't have time to go into this. Suffice to say that we will, I believe, be using satellites very widely to understand what it is that we are doing to the world. Of course, scientists can understand, but the real problem is the politicians who then have to make something happen to stop things. But it will be through the provision of that information that we will, I believe, have a much better ability to convince, not politicians who don't really think very far ahead themselves, ahead of the next election. What we will be doing is convincing the people of our several countries. And I think satellites showing the facts, being able to show clearly what is happening, because I think this will be what we will be seeing, the evidence from the satellites of the hot currents, the various phenomena which make up the conditions of our environment. The satellites will certainly be very much part of our way of communicating to the people of the various countries what needs to be done, and that will then lead to political action. And what about interplanetary travel? Well, my prediction is that somewhere around about 2020, maybe 2025, man, humankind, will go to Mars. Mars is a sort of a, I think it will be the first one we go to. Probably because it's just sort of a symbol. We might sometime later go to another very fascinating and much more challenging part of the solar system. That is the moon of Jupiter, Io, Io. And that one will be, that would be a quite awe-inspiring, in the best use of the word, mission. Why will we do this? Well, once again, it is technology development. There will be four things such as a trip to Mars. There will be technologies developed which would then be very much used here on Earth. I wouldn't mind betting that also when humankind goes to Mars, that there might be commercial sponsors. And I wouldn't be at all surprised, for example, and my choice is in no way meant to be indicative, I wouldn't mind betting that the sponsors of the trip to Mars might be the Reader's Digest, the Murdoch organisation, the Church of Latter-day Saints, Coca-Cola, and a few others. And I wouldn't mind betting that it would be widely syndicated on television. But it will, of course, be then pay television. And throughout the world, we will have pay television. And as a man who's spent a lot of his life trying to find ways to make money to do research, and if I start to do the sums of 250 million people in the developed part of the world, a billion people in the developed part of the world, 10% having paid television. If you have some really exciting things going on with the spacecraft halfway to Mars, like the birth of the first child in space, I think that we might find that you could begin to find very substantial commercial funding for such activities. You might think I'm being facetious, I probably am. But stranger things have happened. And I wouldn't be at all surprised, and of course I won't be around then to know, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to find that activities such as that will have very substantial commercial involvement, and where the user pays principal, which we've learned all about in the last 10 years, will be taken to its ultimate, so that the people who are watching it and just marvelling at this exercise that takes man to Mars will be paying at that moment from their pocketbooks. I think that's probably you might think that's a very great stretch of the imagination, in which case we might have something good to talk about over dinner. So, in all of this, to wrap it up, what will Australia's position be? Australia In 1989, we are, as a nation, not a space nation, but we're a very good user of space in communications and remote sensing of its various forms. we are very competent, we export quite a bit of that knowledge. In 2015 we will either say, wasn't it good that in the 1990s we began to get some modest involvement in the space building of satellites, which made sure that our industry remained able to be involved, and therefore that we were able to get the data, and in which case we will be remote sensing and communications experts for many parts of the world. Or in 2015 we will say, goodness, we were doing so well in the use of space back in the 1980s, but we let the control of the technology get away from us. And now it's only the countries that supply the technology that goes into space. Those countries such as India and China and Bulgaria, as well as Soviet Union and USA and so on. Those countries are the ones who have the rights to the data. We Australians have to buy the data from, for example, India. That is the satellite imagery of our own country. And I find it hard to know at this moment which of those two scenarios will attain. I think in the last 5 years we've made enough progress that the scenario which is that we Australians will be part of the providers of the space technology of the world, modest providers, 1 to 2 to 3% of total progress. I think that that's the one that will pertain. And that since we are members of the syndicates, since our companies or our nation is involved, so we will have rights to the data, so we will therefore exploit the data and get value, add value to the data and sell the data. But the jury is a little out, and the next few years, now talking 1989, will tell us whether in 2015 we are still very well respected and competent users of space, or whether we simply buy the services in the final form, like finished motor cars, shipped in on a ship and with no employment for Australia other than the selling process. I certainly hope that it is the former, they are involved, because that also gives our scientists and our technologists some jobs to do. If the decisions take us the other route, well, Australian science in many areas will not have the opportunity to use its skills. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's my scenario for 2015. Some of it, quite certain. Some of it, very extreme. I thank you for your patience.